June 7, 1979, for the Orleans County Historical Association, Miss Dorothy Corliss of Medina is interviewing Mrs. Ethel Hart Hellenkamp of 614 Ann Street in Medina. Mrs. Hellenkamp was born in 1889 and has just recently celebrated her 90th birthday.
Hellenkamp, where were you born?
I was born in Clinton, Ontario.
And what year?
1889.
Your mother was?
My mother was Lottie Kendall.
Lottie Kendall. And your father?
And my father was Henry LeBaron Hart.
Henry LeBaron Hart.
With two T's.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one sister, Frances Edison.
Was she older than you or younger?
Younger.
She was
2 years younger.
And how did you happen to come from Ontario to Medina?
I think my father was anxious to get out from his father's thumb. Mm-hmm. His father was a lawyer. He was a judge in Huron County, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And he wanted him to go into the law business, and my father didn't want to. He was one of six brothers, and none of them wanted to go into their father's profession. A good many of them came to the States.
How old were you when your father made this decision?
About five. This was in 1895.
And how did he happen to pick Medina?
I think he knew Mr. Robert Charles, who had a dry goods business here, and he offered him a job over here, and my father had a wife and two children, and he needed money. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened. We came over here. My father's father was a very strict man. And very strict, and my father was strict also, I should say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we came to Medina in 1895, and this Robert Charles store was at 513 Main Street. I have a feeling you do want the number, dates.
Yes,
and
very good.
Mm-hmm. And he was there a little later. In 1899, he engaged in the grocery business. This is my father. Mm-hmm. And then he turned to the line in which he was engaged for over 30 years, furniture and undertaking. He was first doing undertaking with Hart and Hill, Ernest I. Hill. They were in business together. Then they combined with Daniel D. Holdridge in the same business. They called the firm Holdridge, Hart and Hill. That was at 421 Main Street. And that lasted from 1913 to 1925. And in 1925, my father took over the business after Mr. Holdridge died. Mm-hmm. And it went under the name of Holdridge, Hart and Hill. I don't mean that. It went under the name of H. LeBaron Hart Company.
Yes.
Until his death, my father's death.
That's how I remember it.
33. And Dave Barnes was associated also. And with the firm and carried on after my father died until it was sold to her Tui? No, not Tui.
Walter Tuttle?
Who?
Walter Tuttle?
Walter Tuttle.
How was the business conducted at this time when your father was an undertaker?
Well, in those days, there were no facilities for rent. He had to have all of his own tools.
His hearse?
The hearse and the
ambulance.
And the truck and the chairs, everything one uses at a funeral. He also thought he had to have an ambulance because there was none in town. So he built in the back of our yard, clear across the back of it, an 8-stall garage for all of these purposes. It was a 2-story garage, so that on the second floor, they could keep the caskets.
Oh, that's right.
And there was a hole in the floor so that the casket could be let down by a pulley. And there were other things that were kept up there too, the catafalque and urns.
There was a stairway.
And things like that. But they also were raised by hoist. In those days, too, embalming was done in the homes. The men who did the embalming, the undertakers, were often given breakfast if a death occurred at night. The funerals were held in the homes also. And there was always a crepe hung on the door of homes where a death occurred. Later, a wreath, a black crepe. Later, a wreath or a spray of flowers was used.
At what time did they finally buy the funeral home, when the customs changed?
Well, that was after my father died. My father had nothing to do with the funeral home. Addison, I, and Dave mm-hmm. bought that. And they had it, of course, fixed over for the convenience of the funeral. Funerals, they took all of the caskets down there. They are stored down there. The chairs are stored down there. They have the embalming room down there. They have a sleeping room where the body rests until they're ready to show it. And I think that's all I have to say about that.
Probably. It's quite a change from when the funerals were held in the homes.
That's right.
Then as a child, you went to school in Medina.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember some of your teachers?
I can remember two or three of them. I started in the first grade, of course, when I came, and a Miss Hood was the first grade teacher. A Miss Possum was a second grade teacher. I don't remember the third, but there was Katie L. Ryan and Miss Lenahan.
I had Miss Lenahan.
You probably did.
Margaret Lenahan.
Margaret Lenahan, that's right.
And you
right.
had Miss Lenahan. Mm-hmm. She must have taught a long time.
She spanned a long, long time. Yes. Miss Noonan, Cora J.
Yes.
And that was as far up to the eighth grade. Then in high school, I had Grace Rugg
yes. mm-hmm.
and Marjorie Boyce, and who was the Latin teacher? And Mr. Mosier, who was our principal, taught math. Mr. Van Etten was the superintendent of schools at that time. That's about all I remember about that. I hadn't thought of them in years.
As a child, what were some of the things you did? I mean, now, did they have the county fair then?
Oh, if you want to hear about the county fair, I'll have to tell you about the canal.
Good.
Yeah, the county fair, we used to always go to the county fair. Sometimes we go by horse and buggy. Sometimes in a truck. Didn't call them trucks in those days. Hayride.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes by boat, by canal boat. And of course that was the most fun because we didn't come back until midnight and we danced on the boat.
Where did you get on the boat? Would it be down back at your father's store?
It must have been down back at my father's store because that's the only place there is to get on the boat. Yeah.
And it let you off quite near the fairgrounds?
Let us off right there on the main street, really, mm-hmm. I don't know how we got to the fairgrounds. We probably walked.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. I don't really remember much of anything else except that we danced on the boat coming home.
When you went in the horse and buggy, did you go for all day and take your picnic lunch?
Yes, we always took a picnic lunch. Mm-hmm. We went for all day and usually there was a crowd of us. We didn't go with our parents for some reason or other. We went with the kids. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more fun. And we also, if you want to know about what we did as young people, we used to go to Alcott, we used to go to Lakeside because there were dance halls there and roller skating rinks and little theater there.
We went to all
of those places.
It was quite a trip to Alcott, wasn't it?
It was quite a trip to Alcott, but we went by trolley to Alcott.
I was thinking there was a trolley.
Mm, there was a trolley. And those two hotels, the one at Alcott and the one at Lakeside, were beautiful hotels. The one at Lakeside had porches all the way around covered with vines.
Mm.
The one at Alcott had porches all the way around and it was built way out over the water. We used to dance on the porches. At Alcott, we used to dance on the floor at Lakeside. There were always dances there, and we went to them. We used to drive by horse and buggy to Lakeside.
Yeah, that was nearer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was about 16 miles. Chattagy is about 10 miles from mm-hmm. here. And there was a rink at Chattagy.
A skating rink
at Chattagy. I know we had a cottage at the lake, at Lakeside. And my father used to come down every weekend and he used to ride a bicycle. And one time we just wanted to go down off season and he and I went down on a tandem bicycle. And I think he did most of the pumping probably. But we stopped at a place called Wheelman's Rest. Do you know anything about Wheelman's Rest?
Oh, that's where Marjorie Johnson's
home. That's Marjorie Johnson's home. We stopped there and they always had cookies and milk for the cycler. That little Wheelman's Rest was on a high bluff on the banks of Oak Orchard Creek. We used to go to, there was another place we used to go and I can't even think of that. That's why I want you to stop once in a while.
To stop.
All right. You asked about Elm Park, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it was on the Oak Orchard Creek, just the same. It was a private park by a man who allowed us to go in there and swim. And he had boats there. I think he charged a little something to get in. There were boats there that you could ride. He had a merry-go-round, and Sunday school picnics went there almost every year, two or three Sunday school picnics a year.
That was a different kind of a merry-go-round that went out over the water.
Yeah.
You sat in these
yes,
chairs.
Yes, it went over the water.
And you sat in chairs.
In chairs, uh-huh.
How was that propelled? By the water power?
No. No, it wasn't. It was, I think, by manpower.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember that was fun to go over the water, and I only went there after it was revived years later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where it is now. It's back of Ann Richards, mm-hmm. about, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We didn't know.
Well, yes, I know that, but whether they're interesting or not, that's what I don't know.
There, then when you were growing up, they were enlarging the canal. They built the New York State Barge Canal.
They were building the New York State Barge Canal, that's right. Along about 1900 is really when I remember most of it, or a little after. And I know that my father and a number of men from here used to go down and hold services for the workmen, mostly Italians. There were a few Irish, but most of them were Italians. I don't know how much English they understood, but they enjoyed having the men come anyway. And my father would always take Addis and me down. We were embarrassed to tears, but of course we loved it too, to sing for them. And I think the men enjoyed it. It reminded them of their kids at home.
You want to tell us some of the things you sang? Can you remember?
All I can remember really is Whispering Hope and The Tie That Binds, some of the little familiar hymns, mm-hmm. and little ballads. And things like that. I think the men enjoyed it, probably.
As you say, it reminded them of their children at home.
Of their children at home. Later, along about 1908 or 9, some of the boys became timekeepers for the men on the canal. They were at Knowlesville, most of them were at Knowlesville. The ones we knew were at Knowlesville. And we girls used to pack a picnic lunch and go down and have lunch with them after they were through the day's work, which was 5 o'clock.
You went in your horse and buggy?
On a trolley. There was a trolley in those days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Later, after my husband got to town, he used to go down and teach them, the Italians, English. And they always walked him home. And they always insisted on his having a beer, and he had the hardest time refusing because he was a teacher. He wouldn't have minded having the beer himself, but he didn't dare take it in public. And then a tragedy happened. One of the Italians killed a man. He had to get out of the country fast. He fled back to Italy. He owed my father money, and my father wrote it off as a bad debt, never expecting to hear from him again. In a few years, he got the full amount that was owed him. So a man can commit a murder and still pay his debts. I don't think there's anything else. Oh, do you want anything modern on the canal, my experience with the
yes,
canal.
Yes, if it's your experience.
We used to, our neighbors, the Carl Barry, the Watson Barry, used to be our neighbor. They used to take us for rides up to Middleport and down to Albion in their motorboat, which was fun. There's something even later than that, the senior citizens' trip to Lockport. Do you want that?
Yes.
Do you? Well, the senior citizens had a trip on a boat to Lockport to see the locks. That was really a lovely, lovely trip. And we're always hoping that they'll have another one.
That must have been quite a different kind of a boat than the one you went to the Albion Fair on.
It was called a yacht. And I guess it was a little different kind of a boat. It didn't have a big level floor.
Well, now, when you went to Albion, did the horses pull the boat?
The horses pulled the boat. No, not then. That was another time. No, it was a motorized.
By that time, it was motorized.
Motorized, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was a canopy, too, over the walk or the
deck.
Dance floor. Yeah. There's another thing that happened to us that we thought was really very interesting indeed, but it happened just last year, a couple of years ago. Do you want anything
yes,
as modern
yes,
as that?
If it happened to you, that's... Huh? As long as it happened to you.
Well, Pearl Eddy and Jesse Brightbeck and Ada Olds and I went down to the Albion Sesquicentennial. That was a couple of years ago in 78. And we went to see the boat parade, the canal boat parade. We got a good seat on the bank of the canal in the marina, in a picnic area. There were picnic tables and chairs on the banks of the canal. And we were sitting there and a boat came along and moored right in front of us. We kind of half recognized the boat as having seen it in our trip to down the Niagara River to Niagara Fort, the Fort of Niagara from Lewiston. And this boat was moored there. There was something going on with the boat people on that day. And we spoke about having seen it up there. We got into conversation with the skipper and his daughter, a man by the name of Clemens, and his daughter Kim Clemens. And they had a couple of dogs, and they were walking the dogs. And they were going to be in the boat parade. And came time for the parade, and they said to us, would you like to ride in the parade with us? Which we did, and it was more fun than a circus to ride in the Albion Sesquicentennial Parade. When they came back, we asked them if they would have dinner with us. They couldn't because they had some kind of affairs with the boat people. But I just heard from Kim this last week. I had said you have a rain check, asking whether the rain check still held, could she come for dinner? Hmm. And I said, of course, I'd get the women together, and we got the women together, and she, Kim had a infected ear and couldn't come.
Aww.
So we were very disappointed at that, but we had our lunch together anyway. Played a little bridge. That's it for that. I guess I said this. It seemed to me that my mother and Mrs. Charles Mack were always heading up some project to earn money for the YMCA and the Scouts. An annual event during the years 1908 to 1912 was the Flower Carnival in the summer, and a home talent play during the Christmas holidays. That was annual, that was every year. The Flower Carnival was held on the high school campus. There were booths erected for the display of flowers and prizes given. There were booths erected for snacks and crafts and other saleables. There was always a platform built for a one-act play on the last night. Mabel Shiner Hobbs, a dramatic teacher from Briarcliff Manor, who spent her summer vacations here with her mother, Mrs. John Schuyler, coached these one-act plays. Mr. Schuyler is the man who laid all of the flagstone sidewalks in Medina and most of the later cement ones. These women also handled the YMCA baked bean suppers, and we girls got to wait on the table. That's the flower business. And then there were the annual plays. Those were for raising money too, and Mrs. Hobbs was the director of these plays. They were three-act plays, and they really were something like Topa, or something like the little theater.
Where were these plays held?
They were held in the Diana Theater. And there was really a more or less resident cast. There was Virgil Parker, Bill Bites, Cedric Digert, Christine Kenyon, and I. We were the regulars. There were always others to fill in. I remember I was thrilled one time because a traveling show was watched our dress rehearsal, and they asked me to join their tour.
Oh, how exciting.
They even came up to ask my parents if I could go with them.
Oh.
And years later, I was also asked to join the Chautauqua team, and that really was bona fide. I'm not sure this other was, but I think it was.
Well, they came and asked your parents.
Anyway.
Sounds like
it. And I often wonder what my life would have been like if I'd joined them. I don't think as satisfying as it's been so far.
Thrilled to be asked. Especially at that age.
I am, especially at that age, that's right. That's the flower carnival. Mr. Dave Barnes had been the first secretary of the YMCA here in Medina when he came to be a partner of my father's.
At that time, the Y was on Main Street?
On Main Street, across from the Journal Building.
And upstairs.
That's where they held their supper. Upstairs. That's where they held their suppers.
And had their meeting rooms.
And had their meetings. Mm-hmm. Did I say anything about the bean suppers? And
you waited on table.
That we waited on table?
That's where you had those.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to camp, you said.
Then later on, I don't know who all the secretaries were, but there was a man named Richardson that was a secretary after Mr. Barnes was full-time business with your father.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
There was a Mr. Richardson, and the last one of all was a man named A.V. Chamberlain. I remember them because they were director at the time that I went to the camp sponsored by the Y down on Lake Ontario near Barker, Camp Nundawaga.
Yes, I don't remember the man, but I do remember that camp. I'd been down there because my husband was down there with them. What do you call him?
He was a counselor.
A counselor down there,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a while. It was a nice camp.
It was a lovely camp.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ladies from town would go down in the strawberry season and make jam to be used later on.
That's right. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went there, Mrs. Teal, who was the farmer's wife, I think she was the mother of that dentist that was here for a while, Norman Teal.
Mm-hmm.
She was the cook. The chief cook,
mm-hmm.
at the time I went down there.
I remember
that. And then
that
the Depression
too.
Came along, and that's why they no longer sponsored that Y.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Chamberlain was the last director.
You said that there were houses built down there?
Well, instead of tents, first they had platforms and then tents, but in place of the tents, they began building little buildings they called bunkhouses. They had a roof and a platform, and the wall came up all about waist high, and they could put canvas flaps down to protect it from the weather or at night. And the Rotary Club used to give a day a year and go down and build one, and they were getting, four or five or more by the time the camp closed. So it was mm-hmm. getting to have quite nice facilities.
Mm-hmm. But the Depression closed then?
The Depression ended their sponsoring a Y, and for a few years they rented the camp out to other organizations. Some college sorority, I think, ran a camp for a while. Then they ran into some problem about the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the camp was sold back to the farm that it had belonged with. Anyway, it's no longer in existence.
Mm-hmm. You never know what happened. You'll know more about it than I.
We've been talking about how you entertained yourselves when you were young. Can you tell us about Bent's Opera House?
I can tell you about Bent's Opera House because we loved it. It was one of the big things in our lives. It's in that stone building where Liberty Bank now stands, on the corner of Main Street and West Center Streets. The entrance was on West Center, a wide stairway going up three flights. The Opera House was on the third floor. The Odd Fellows used the second floor. It was a typical 1900s show house, playhouse. Was painted scenery, drop curtain, wings, flies, proscenium arch, everything like that that the old playhouses used to have. Charlie Hood was the promoter. He had loved dramatics and he had a flair for dramatics. And it was through his efforts that Medina had many years of pretty good theater. Plays like East Lynne, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Way Down East, The Fatal Necklace, and minstrel shows. And Charlie Hood was right there at with every one of them in his Mark Twain outfit.
I remember that flowing tie he wore.
Yeah, the flowing tie. And the Odd Fellows promoted there were several kinds of shows there. The Odd Fellows promoted theatrical performances too. They hired professional companies to come in, bring their own staff, their costumes and scenery, and use the local amateur talent for the cast. And, you know, they were kind of pretty too, because the costumes were more beautiful than anything any homemade costume would be. They were made of gold lamé and silver lamé. They were really very handsome. And they were pretty good shows. They were mostly variety shows, the kind that they gave. Then there were the really home talent shows on the order of Topa or our little theater. Once a year, for several years, Harry K. Crumpart would put on an opera like Gilbert and Sullivan's Pinafore, The Mikado, The Pirates of Penzance, and The Coeds of Glenwood. And this really was fun, and everybody was in. We had some pretty good talent, too. Helen Curtis from Lindenville was the soprano star. Cedric Digert, John Q. Dresser, Charlie Hurd, Godfrey Stork, and Betty Clark. They were the regulars. The rest of us were the pirates and the cousins and the aunts.
Well, Cedric Digert was a brother to the man who was Tom Ridgway clerk, Herbert Digert, right?
Herbert. He was brother Herbert. And he was handsome. You'd be surprised how handsome he was. And Charlie Hurd was handsome. They were handsome leading men.
I knew Charlie Hurd in his old age. He was like a grandfather to me. I lived next door to him.
Yeah. Well, they were good looking leading men. This was around 1907 to 1914. How long before that, I don't remember. But after the movies began to crowd out the live talent, Bents became a bingo parlor. And that lasted through the 50s and the 60s. I've always been grateful that my father finally relented and took us kids to see Uncle Tom's Cabin. He was very strict and he was not going to let us see Uncle Tom's Cabin. To him, the theater was an invention of the devil. But we teased to go, and I remember the soul searching over Uncle Tom's Cabin. But they had read Harriet Beecher Stowe, and could anything that Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote be bad? So they relented and we went. And that was the entering wedge. I was hooked. After that, there was nothing but dramatics for me. One night at the opera house, we were rehearsing for one of Gilbert and Sullivan's operas, and it was the night that Halley's Comet was going to be visible, and we all went up on the roof to sit watch Halley's Comet. That really was something, and it's the last thing I remember about Bent's Opera House.
Did it have a slanting floor?
A what?
Did the floor slant in the opera house?
No, it didn't. And I don't know how people really saw the back of it, because it didn't slant.
What were the footlights, gas?
They are gas.
Footlights. Mm-hmm. And that is an age that went with the movies. Where were the first movie places in Medina? Was the Diana Theater where the first ones
were? No, one of them was down on East Center Street.
Mm-hmm. Up about where the Legion is.
Where is the Legion?
Near Corky's Bakery?
Yeah.
Up over Corky's Bakery?
Yes, right in there. Mm-hmm. That's where the first one was.
There.
And I remember the first one I saw down there was the Lady Scott's Lady of the Lake. They used to have some pretty good shows in those days. Mm-hmm. A little better than they do today.
Then,
thank you.
Now that gym on Park Avenue that Cook built, that turned into the Park Theater, because I went there to the movies when I was a child.
Where's that?
Back of the Cook Building, S.A. Cook built a gymnasium.
Uh-huh.
And that became the Park Theater later on, after the school had their own gym. I guess they didn't need it for a gym anymore.
Uh-huh.
But years ago, I can remember the kids walking by with their sneakers on the way to the gym where the Park Theater was.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a theater. And there were two theaters. There was that and there was the Diana.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was called the Allen Theater. Sidney Allen ran it.
Yes, that's right. There used to be a skating rink in there, too. Mr. Holdridge had a skating rink.
Yeah, I was wondering if that wasn't what had been the park, turned later into the Park Avenue Garage.
I wonder. I think perhaps it was.
And then that burned, I would say, 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think before it was the Park Avenue Garage, that could have been
Mr. Holdridge's
skating rink. Okay. What year did you graduate from high school?
1908.
Do you remember how many were in your class?
About 9.
Now, when you were in high school, I suppose you were going to a lot of events at the Armory? They had basketball games, did they?
They had basketball games. The Armory was one of our delightful places to go. They had more things going on over there. We went to, I think, everything that ever happened. We went to all the drills and the band concerts and the dances, of course. The Armory really played a large part in our social life here.
We're hoping it will again now that the community's taking it over. It sounds like it's going to go back like it was when you were
young. After some of the drills and the basketball games, there was music for dance in the balcony. And then come down and dance. But the really gala affairs were the Armory balls. Perhaps now that the community has taken over the management of that beautiful sandstone building, it will again resume its rightful place in the community. Of course, it will never be the same type of facility it was before. The teens and the 20s were a different era. There were always several dances during the year, but the students coming home from college for their Easter vacation and their Christmas vacation started the social season. The women all wore long dresses, and the men all wore tuxedos in those days. They don't dress. They didn't dress the way they do today. I understand that there's getting to be a disco costume. I've seen people either knitting or crocheting these scarves, of tie around their necks. They're called disco scarves.
I've heard.
But I'd never seen anything but jeans in the pictures and things. Anyway, we used to dress up. We all wore long dresses, and the women wore long elbow or shoulder length white kid gloves.
With little buttons all the way up.
And we had a tiny silver button hook to fasten to. I still have one.
You carry that in your reticule?
Carry that in my reticule. You know, people don't know what reticule means. I'm so surprised that nobody does. You use the word. We don't use it anymore, of course. But they never know that it's a tiny little bag to carry your keys, and if you carry them, and you never carried lipstick in those days, but you did carry a handkerchief.
And a button hook.
And a button hook, that's right. The men usually called us ahead of time to ask the color of our gown so that their corsages wouldn't clash. We almost always walked to the armory. There weren't many cars around in those days. On an inclement night, we would Pixley's or Reynolds livery would furnish a cab. We might have to double up 4 or 5 or 6 to a cab, or possibly on a really bad night have to wait 20 or 30 minutes because there weren't too many cabs available either. When we arrived at the armory, I remember our escorts scurrying around, exchanging dances, and filling our dance programs. They would reserve the first and last dances and the 2 intermission dances for themselves. The orchestra, Mahl's was the favorite, was on a bandstand in the center of the floor. The first number was always the Grand March. The intermission and refreshments were served in the basement, although in later years I understand they served them on the main floor. It always seemed to me the serving of the ice cream and cake never quite matched the style of the rest of the evening. Here we were all dressed up, and then we'd go down in the basement and sit in a row. In the basement, there were rows of chairs along the side walls of that huge room, and 2 rows down the middle, back to back. I remember one evening a guest with an artistic flair sketched pictures of the row of feet of the people across from him that were facing him. It was a fascinating, original study of a row of detached feet. I've always wished we had preserved that picture.
Yes.
The gallery was always full of parents, friends, and guests, and the floor was always full to capacity of participants in the dance. And the floor was always full. It didn't matter when, there was always a crowd. Those days are gone now, and it seems a little sad. However, with the dedicated Community Action Committee guiding the armory's progress over these next years, I am sure it will serve a much broader purpose than it ever did. My wishes go with them.
Now, you said you walked to the party, to the ball. You used to carry your dancing slippers in some kind of a bag?
A velvet bag. Just a homemade velvet bag.
Mm-hmm. And you'd leave that with your coat.
You'd leave that with your coat. Mm-hmm.
But you carried a fan and your reticule.
Yeah.
And wore a corsage.
And wore a corsage. Mm-hmm. Long gloves. Doesn't sound much like what we do today, does it? Or do they? Maybe some people we don't know do it. They probably do. I can't think of anything else right now.
After high school, you went to art school?
I went to Albright's Art Gallery in Buffalo. That was a school at that time. It's not anymore. There were quite a few people from here who went up there. We used to go by trolley. I used to spend the week up there.
Come home weekends.
And come home weekends. And the trolley stopped at the end of Ann Street, so it wasn't hard to get home.
Mm-hmm.
I must say I didn't enjoy it very much. I used to paint. I thought I was pretty good. I used to do watercolors, and I went up there and they put me in what they called antiques, a place where there were just old statues, and we were supposed to do the statues in charcoal with the point of a charcoal pencil that took forever to do.